Today on The Breakdown, we're not doing these long, overly burdensome introductions. Not today. Here's all you need to know. There's 13 left. First place is over $500,000. This is a tournament, obviously. There's a reg pro type, and there's a crazy guy. And hence, some plays will be made that will be a little bit unusual. We're going to break it down right now on The Breakdown with Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
I guess that was concise. I guess we can call that concise.
That was, for me, concise.
And it's going to be a 12-minute podcast, too.
I think the listeners will appreciate that.
You know
that.
What? We've given them too much of our damn time.
We give them a lot of our time.
Yeah.
But they give us our time in return, right? Sort of? Do they?
They can just fast forward whenever they want. We have to actually say all these words. We can't fast forward real life.
That's true. And also, we don't really get their time. We get their attention.
Yeah.
Not their time. It's a little different. I'm not sure if it's different. It might be the same thing. Anyway, that was a great conversation.
Anyway, I don't respect the listeners.
Why not?
They're leeches. They're leeching on my time.
Is this because of the conversation we were just having?
No.
Okay. We were talking about what it would like to be a billionaire and how you could get all these free massages. And then quickly realized that you wouldn't have to like strike a cool deal with a great masseuse to come to your island and, you know, you wouldn't have to pay them. Because you'd be paying for everything, that of course you'd have a live-in masseuse anyway if you were a billionaire. And like, oh, right, of course you would. And this is the thing. We can't even think like them. We don't even think like them.
That's why we're failures.
Yep.
But not as much failures as listeners.
Because they're listening to us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a good strategy, right? Antagonize the listeners at any possible turn.
We've been doing it for better part of a decade.
I'm going to name one. Alex Klaus.
Oh my gosh, here we go.
Suggested this hand.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to go after him. You still might.
Well, his name is Alex and his last name is Klaus. What, are you kidding me? How many k noises are in your name? Two.
One?
Alex.
Just the one, really. You know what I will say about Alex Klaus is his last name sounds a lot like that movie, The Santa Klaus. Both 1, 2, and 3 with Tim Allen.
Is the third one have Tim Allen?
I believe so.
I think the third one is like, we made it for TV, really? And none of the original cast is in it.
I thought he was in it, but I've never seen any of them, of course. I've told that it's actually like a horrifying story of like killing Santa Claus and taking over his identity. And apparently it's like brutal and horrific, but it's a kid's movie anyway.
I've seen it and it's not brutal and horrific.
I mean, conceptually, not actually.
I mean, you don't. Okay.
Does he kill Santa Claus?
Let's talk about the fucking Santa Claus.
Okay.
1996, Tim Allen. Let's talk about it.
Okay. Go.
Also, what's his name? The guy from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Judd, whatever his name is. Judge Reinhold.
Judge Reinhold. Really?
Yeah, he's in that.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So weird. Tim Allen is obviously kind of a cantankerous, divorced man
who doesn't
really believe in Christmas that much and is like, oh, what am I going to do for my brat kid this Christmas? It's too bad that he's a brat. And then the kid's like, Santa Claus is real, which, of course, the kid's always right. And Tim Allen's like, fuck you, only stocks are real. You know, I only care about fast cars and investing in the stock market.
But then he kills Santa.
Yes, because the kid's like, I hear it on the roof. And Tim Allen goes out. He's like, is there somebody on the roof or some sort of burglar? And he goes out and he scares Santa Claus, accidentally kills him because Santa Claus falls off the roof. And apparently, this is like one of those ancient nations where if you kill the emperor, you become the emperor.
So the reindeer immediately bow down to him and he's given the...
The reindeer are a little slow to adopt the new Santa Claus, but Tim Allen clearly becomes the Santa Claus and like he wakes up the next day and he can't lose weight. He's always gaining weight. He's always growing a white beard and he finds the meaning of Christmas.
He finds it not just in Santa Claus 1, but also in Santa Claus 2 and in Santa Claus 3 because he is the star along with Martin Short. Of Santa Claus 3, as it turns out.
That's excellent.
You were right about Judge Reinhold in Santa Claus 1. I guess he dies at the end of that one, though, because he's not in the
He does not die at the end.
Does he kill someone?
No.
Pedophile? No. Is it a pedophile
he's
thing?
No. He's the stepfather of Tim Allen's son, and Tim Allen, and he's a psychiatrist, which is known as a shrink to Tim Allen, of course, because it's like the 90s, and the manly main guy doesn't like psychiatrists because he's a Scientologist, maybe? Not sure. But we know they don't like psychiatrists. Anyway, in the end, though, they learn how to be a family together, the ex-wife.
So the Judge Reinhold character gets put away for pedophilia in between Santa Claus 1 and Santa Claus 2, I guess.
Yeah,
because he's not in the second one.
It's unwritten. Read between the lines.
Okay. By the way, kind of a clever idea, though, the Santa Claus, you know, where, like, kill him, and then the clause in the contract says, like, that's kind of a cool, like, hey, I thought of a cool pun. Let's turn it into a whole movie franchise.
Actually,
like,
I could see that pitch meeting going really well.
Me too.
You're just like, oh yeah, kids are gonna love that.
Yeah, and adults will be like, all right, I'll take you.
And honestly, honestly, that came out when I was 10 years old, and I liked the movie when I was 10 years old.
Yeah. Did you see the sequels?
No.
You didn't see even the second one?
I think I aged out by the
you were
second six, one.
You were actually 18 by the time the second
okay, that's
one came
why
out.
I didn't. That's why I didn't see the second one.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. There aren't enough movies about Santa Claus.
Jingle All the Way.
Okay.
Is that even about Santa Claus?
I don't know.
Or is it just Arnold Schwarzenegger?
I couldn't tell you. Bad Santa. There's people who dress up like Santa Claus. I'm just saying, why not more cultural things, more TV specials, more songs, more movies about Santa Claus?
Yeah.
More cards, you know, cards. Do people still give cards to each other? Probably. You know, more holidayness. I don't mean this, but I will say, people are listening to this and Christmas is long over, but we're recording this and Christmas is yet to happen, which must be why I'm in such a jolly mood.
You know what you just did, though?
What?
You created a rip in the time-space continuum. And
cool.
That's a problem that only the Santa Claus can solve.
And is the Santa Claus Tim Allen, or is that just...
It's a document. The document has an answer for everything.
Well, so then it's not a problem at all.
Not unless we can't find the document.
Uh-oh, it's turning into national treasure.
Yeah, it is. I believe it's behind the room that Eisenhower used to jerk off in. I don't know.
Wow. Like,
in the White House. Okay.
That happened.
Yeah, moving along.
Yeah.
We're going to go ahead and move along here.
Okay.
All right, so there are 13 remaining of the 727 entrants in this EPT event.
Cool.
We got Moritz Dietrich, who is unlisted on Hendon. He's one of those cool kids who's like, you don't even get to know my Hendon stats.
Yeah, he does that on purpose, though. It's not that he doesn't have a Hendon. He's an unknown player whenever he cashes and stuff.
Right, which
like
Hendon
that
allows you to do if you don't want people to see your results. So the current payout is $33,000, as Jonathan mentioned, in first place, over $500,000. We're at $15,000 and $30,000, and Moritz Dietrich not doing so well. He's got $550,000, so it's not horrible. He's approaching 20 bigs, but, you know, he's in the danger zone, as Joe Stapleton would say.
Danger zone.
He's going to open to $70,000 in the hijack with ace-king off, ace of hearts, king of diamonds.
Okay.
Folds to the big blind, who's this guy named Michael Kolkowicz. And I remember I watched this series. It's like one of those eight-part EPT series back in 2017 when it came out. And Michael Kolkowicz has no Hendon besides this event. He was definitely an amateur and definitely just kind of a maniac, like throwing chips around all the time.
Yeah.
They loved this guy because he was an amateur and he was throwing chips around all the time. So they covered him a lot. And
makes sense.
Obviously, he went deep too.
Yeah, he finished...
He finished well.
He did well.
I mean, he's not going to bust in this hand because he's got $2.5 million to start the hand.
So we know that already.
Dietrich has one-fifth of that. Anyway, Kolkowicz has king-queen off in the big blind and he calls. What do you think? Could you just shove in this spot? Like... Late in a tournament, you have king, queen in the big blind, the hijack who has less than 20 blinds opens and is probably, or almost definitely, maybe not by your assessment, a better player than you. Should you just shove king, queen?
I think it's close, actually. I think it's okay to shove king, queen, but I don't think you have to shove king, queen here. I think it's really fine to call. See flops sometimes, you know, like it's the kind of, you're going to get boards when you have top pair that your opponent's going to rep a lot.
You
put a lot of chips in. And they're short enough that you can often get all their chips when you flop top pair. So you can sort of like make sure you flopped well before you put all the chips in. Obviously, if you were to shove, you're going to get a lot of folds, especially with your nice blockers that you have.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a problem to shove. I would have no problem if he shoved here, but I don't mind him calling at all either.
No, me neither. The only thing you could do wrong would be to fold.
That would be clearly wrong. And he does not.
No, he calls.
He calls.
So the pot's 190K.
Give me a call. Call me sometimes. That's what he's like.
Who are you referring?
Give me a call.
Is this your Michael Kolkowicz impression?
Yeah, Michael Kolkowicz when he's about to leave and he wants someone to call him. He's like, give me a call sometime. Call me.
He sells like high end trailers, you know, for camping, and he lets somebody at a party know that and he gives them their card, and he's like, you know, he's a casual salesperson. He's like, you know, if you ever feel like being in the forest for a bit, an ultra, give me a call. Paul?
The thing is, he actually has a very deep voice. Normally. Yeah. He's like, yes, these are the this is the Cascade 6000. But you know, give me a call sometime. Give me a call. Anyway.
Yeah. He's got nice business cards, you know, like raised lettering and stuff.
I mean, everyone loves a nice business card, especially these days.
Especially these days, yeah. You got one of those business card holders that you carry around with you in your pocket in case somebody gives you a business card.
Boy, no one's given me a business card in a while, and I'm happy about it. Maybe it's because there's a pandemic that's been going on
for a really long time. Maybe it's because nobody wants to do business with you.
Oh, well, that's not good for you, is it, Grant?
I have other businesses.
But still, not good for you that no one wants to do business with me since I'm a partner of yours.
I've definitely hitched my wagon to the wrong guy.
I think we can all agree on that.
Mr. No Business Cards over here.
Yeah. I don't want a business card. If it's mine or someone else's, I throw it away.
That's not true. You have plenty of your own.
I crumple them up in front of people and throw them on the ground when they hand them to me and say, bleh.
Is that what you do with change when cashiers give you change?
No, I tell them, keep the damn change, and they're not allowed to.
Yeah.
So it's a great thing because I put them in this weird moral place, this weird moral dilemma, right? I'm like, I'm not taking it. You have to keep it. And they're like, we're not allowed to keep it, sir. We have to give it. I'm like, I'm not taking it. And they're like, can we put it in this charity? I'm like, no, you cannot. That's my money. You cannot put it in the charity. You have to take it. So
you sound delightful.
That's just a regular Tuesday for me. Regular Tuesday afternoon at the grocery store.
Delightful.
Yeah.
Quite delightful. Anyway.
Yeah.
We've got Moritz Dietrich with 550K to start the hand and Ace King off.
Sure.
Having opened. We've got Michael Kolkiewicz, the crazy amateur, with King Queen off. Pot's 190K. Flop is nothing for nobody.
Yeah.
Deuce of Hearts, Six of Diamonds, Nine of Diamonds. And it goes check, check. I want to talk a decent amount about Dietrich's check back here because I think it's an interesting spot that a lot of us find ourselves in, especially with this type of stack at this huge inflection point in the tournament. How do you approach this with a hand like Ace-King on the Deuce-6-9 board? It's not super coordinated, but it's coordinated.
I mean, it's really not our board. That's for sure, right? It's 9 high. It's not super coordinated, like you say. We do have the King of Diamonds in our hand, which blocks some of the hands that would want to stick around. Also, having the King of Diamonds in our hand means that we can go run or diamond. So if we start betting now, it sets up a nice bet on the turn where we can already have the flush way more of the time than if we check here.
Yeah.
Right. And of course, we can make the flush and have built a nice pot to shove the river on. I don't know, man. I when I'm this short, I generally want to make a bet and just try and take it down and not like screw around because like I feel like playing with balance and all that, not as great when I'm already at, like, you know, 18 blinds.
Right.
Like, I just want to win this freaking pot.
We're not against a player who we need to balance against either.
Right. That's a good point.
Yeah. Like, I value the protection of betting more than I value the balance of checking back here. I think.
Yep. I agree. This is a person where you need to probably be balanced against anyway.
Right.
Of course, if he's very aggressive, maybe you just, like, you mostly check your misses. You know,
yeah, I guess you could do that and just call or whatever. But yeah. I think I like a 65K bet. Just, you know, let's just take it down.
Yeah, I think I want to just take it down. I agree.
Do you think if you knew Kolkiewicz was a really good player, would you check more frequently?
I think you have to check more frequently.
Yeah.
Kolkiewicz may just be looking to shove on us a lot because he knows we're short. And so if he has anything of anything reasonable, he may just be like, eh, let's see how much you like your hand. Because it's okay with me if you call. Like, I can afford it, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I can take more chances. I can push you around with, you know, with any draw that I want and top pair and maybe even some other stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, that goes check, check.
Yep. That's fine.
I guess it's fine. Turns the deuce of spades. So now, deuce of hearts, six of diamonds, nine of diamonds, deuce of spades.
Okay.
If I like a bet from Kolkiewicz here, what do you think?
Yeah, this is a good time to lead for sure. This is our board. This is our turn. Like, we can have very strong hands, but we don't have to bet our very strong hands. We could also bet our medium strength hands here. Very reasonably, we could bet a nine or a six.
Right. We're probably not expecting Dietrich to be so balanced that he's checking back hands like ace nine, right? We'd expect that if Dietrich had anything with his stack depth, he would probably bet on the flop.
I think he would just feel like he has to.
So that means we're going to get this through a lot of the time if we bet. And we have king high. We should do that, right?
I agree. I really like a bet here.
He does not.
No.
He checks.
He does not.
Should Dietrich bet now? He's gotten two checks. He's got what's very likely to be the best hand.
Yeah. I like betting. I mean, I liked betting before. I like betting even as played. Now I think betting is good just to deny equity. Like, why not? Again, this pot matters to us. Let's win it.
Yeah. I agree. Dietrich is going to bet.
Oh, okay.
He's going to bet 40K. And this is another thing I want to talk about. I understand this sizing against a good player. This is going to work plenty against a good player. Mm-hmm. My concern, if I'm in Dietrich's shoes, now maybe he's trying to induce, but my concern if I'm in Dietrich's shoes is that an amateur will misread this as weakness, where that doesn't necessarily mean weakness from our range, and we know that, but the amateur doesn't, and will check raise us far more frequently than if we bet something like 75K.
I mean, I think almost no matter what we bet here, we're pretty weak. Like, yeah. This board, and after checking the flop with our stack size, we almost never have a very strong hand.
Would you rather check back then, actually, than just bluff catch the river?
I mean, if I think my opponent is liable to make a lot of bluff raises at me, I want to check back. If I think my opponent's going to play straightforward, I'm just going to bet, and it's okay if they know that I'm weak, you know? Doesn't matter. They like so often we'll see players who are not top level players, you know, you bet the turn and they grumble about how you can't have it and they fold their hand. And
yeah.
It's like, cool. Like, that's great. Like, think I don't have it and don't make a play at me. I love you.
I love you.
I want to spend more time with you than anyone.
Wow. You said that to somebody you just met at the poker table?
Not just met. I mean, we'd been there for
a while. Like, played for a couple hours?
Or sometimes less, yeah. And I don't always say it. Sometimes I just say it with my eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
But sometimes I say it with a song. And sometimes...
Can we get an example?
Well, sure.
Yeah.
You know, I won't be so dramatic about it the way some people might, but I'll be like, you know, you are so beautiful
yeah.
to me. You know, like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll say this. I've had some very memorable excursions.
Yeah.
Some very memorable evenings.
And trips to Hawaii.
I've been swept off my feet many times.
Of course. The Levy way.
The Levy way.
From a more, from a bigger perspective, do you ever get concerned when you're sizing it really small on boards that you're supposed to size it small on when you're against amateurs that you're going to get a result you don't want because they're an amateur and they're not going to understand the situation the same way you do?
Sure. I mean, I'm concerned about that against everybody, honestly.
Because
like a pro's probably got more moves than an amateur, honestly. Yeah. But that said, I've generally have found that like when I get over that, like that fear, like there was a point when I really like learned to start betting much, much smaller. I'm thinking about when I actually was playing the 888 in the World Series in like 2017, I think. And I decided I was going to start betting way smaller. So like I'd raise to 150 in level one and I bet 100 on the flop or 75 on the flop. I just kept doing that. I built up like for level one, a shockingly big stack as everyone just kept freaking folding to these tiny, tiny, tiny bets. And I was like, oh, it's the same as betting more. This is great. You know, and I got really into betting extra small. You know, and obviously you have to size up in certain boards and things like
that's
that.
That's a little different in level one when the pots don't matter as much. Like when you're in a late stage of a tournament, it's like it's hard to actually pull the trigger of betting smaller, even if you know it's the right sizing, because you might get a check raise when you don't want one.
What I'm saying is, though, that I think emotionally it's all kind of the same of like there's that fear of like, is this going to be misinterpreted and is this just going to really fail because it's so small? And like I like got over that hump and then was sort of like shocked at how well it worked. I agree. It's a different situation, but emotionally it all feels the same. So I'm always concerned when I bet really tiny, and I don't have a true monster that it's going to get misinterpreted and bad things are going to happen, but they almost never do.
Yeah.
You know,
anyway, here we got Dietrich betting 40 into 190. I mean, forget misinterpretation for a second. Should Kolkowicz raise? He's got King Queen high. Dietrich, check back the flop. Got a range advantage here as Kolkowicz.
Yeah.
Is this a really good raising spot?
I think it's a totally reasonable raising spot.
Is it a good enough story having not bet the turn, though?
I mean, when we check raise instead of betting the turn, we're repping a very strong hand.
Yeah, we're not repping a nine at that point.
No, we're repping at least trip deuces and I think full houses, too. I mean,
yeah.
The question is, what full houses can we really have? Very few.
There's six is full.
I mean, we're almost always going to three bet sixes pre...
We didn't three bet king queen.
I know.
It's about the same thing.
It's not, though, because sixes play so much worse post flop against 20 blinds out of position.
I guess.
So badly. Like, you're always going to have tough spots unless you actually hit a set. I would just expect sixes to play much
But Kolkowicz probably has every suited deuce.
Yes. I think that's fair. So I guess that's what we're repping.
Yeah.
And that's a reasonable thing to rep. We can have that. It's one of those things where it's like the story isn't great, but who cares? You're going to have to fold anyway, mostly. Like, I can have it. You kind of can't. And you just have to fold. You're short. This is bad for you. Fuck off, right? Like, I like a check raise here by Kolkowicz.
Well, he does. He check raises pretty small. Maybe this is just him being an amateur, or I don't know. But he makes it 105 over 40. The original pot size before the 40 was 190. This just feels too small, right?
Well, I mean, it is pretty small, but it shouldn't matter, right? Like, we should be up against a hand that's just going to fold to any raise. Like, a lot, like, the hands that are folding are probably folding to any raise size.
Probably.
So does it really matter that it's small? I don't know. Like, I'm wondering if we even, could we make it 90? Like, can he call for 90 with most of his range? I don't think so.
I don't know. Dietrich has a lot of ace high, and I feel like it's a lot easier to call this than a bigger raise with ace high.
That's true.
Especially against this story. Like, it's not a good story.
It's, you know, if we don't have a deuce, it's we don't really have anything.
Let's not forget Kokowicz's reputation. He's known at this point
right.
throughout the tournament as being the guy who's, like, he has $2.5 million because he's been splashing around like crazy.
Yeah. Well, if that's true, then that makes this check raise a lot less appetizing.
Yeah.
Because then it starts to feel like maybe once in a while, we're like, Dietrich is going to check the flop with strong, with a lot of strong hands to induce.
Maybe.
And yeah. then, like, you check again. He's like, all right, fine, I bet. But I bet small to see if I can just, hey, I did it. I got you. I finally got you, you know? So, yeah, that's true. That's fair. If he's, but then the sizing may not matter again all that much if we just have this crazy rep. I mean, the more you bet, though, it's generally scarier. Generally.
If we have this crazy rep, maybe we shouldn't take the crazy line. Maybe we should just bet the turn instead.
Bet the turn or check fold is okay, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think, but the thing is, this crazy rep's we've been playing crazy and it's been working clearly for
and it's also so not like whatever. We're not like affecting the crazy rep. We actually, that's just how we play. And as an amateur who has never cashed in anything live that's been recorded before, we're probably not capable of recognizing that we need to change it
or maybe even switching gears at all.
Yeah.
Like, I'll give Kokowicz credit. Maybe he's just crazy and it doesn't matter, but maybe he recognized this situation as like, this board is mine. That turn card is mine.
Yeah.
You check the flop, you're short. Come on, man. You just have almost no strong hands here. Like, you just have to fold no matter what. It doesn't matter what I have. Who cares what I have? You're screwed. Go away.
Yeah.
Like, maybe he didn't think that, but, like, it's possible he could see all that. That's not, like, crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty easy board to read as far as whose board it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dietrich does call. This is probably
a
reputational awareness thing.
This, I mean, that's the most interesting part of the hand so far to me is Dietrich calls this raise with ace-king high, no draw.
Yeah. I mean, he's just, I mean, Kolkowicz's range is just deuces are better, right?
Yeah.
So
I think.
Yeah. Maybe Kolkowicz is the guy who's going to check raise a six here. Who knows? Like, maybe he is.
I mean, can he have 9-6 and just think like.
Maybe.
I mean, a 9-6 really plays the same as a 9 pretty much, though, right? Against the range.
I think a bigger question is, could he have just a 6 or a 9? Like, if he's an amateur and.
It's possible he could have a 9 and just think like, you're short and I'm not going to give you another free card when you bet this tiny. That's actually, you know what? It's totally reasonable he could have a 9,
I think. If he has a 9 in his range, this is not as good of a call.
I agree. Would a 9 actually check raise is the question.
I mean, most players wouldn't.
Right. Dietrich probably has played enough with this guy, maybe to know if he's check raising top pair or not. He may know that top pair is not part of that range. It's like way more polarized than that. And if that's true, then we can call, I guess. I don't know if I want to. I kind of just want to throw it away and move the hell on, even though this guy's crazy, it's different.
He might just have all of the bluffs.
Yeah. Like, if he has all the bluffs, we have to call.
He doesn't really have a reason to be bluffing with this hand other than the board.
Right.
Right. So he might just have all of the bluffs.
Yeah. Yeah. If you know he has all the bluffs, then I guess we can't fold. But it sucks. What's our plan for the river? Ah.
Hidden
sounds
ace.
Hard.
Hidden ace.
Okay. Hidden ace is a great idea.
Yeah. Well, Dietrich does call.
Okay.
You better call a doctor because Nitrogen Sports is going to knock your socks off, and that's somehow something that you need a doctor for.
Well, if your socks are not on, how are you going to get them back on without medical help?
That's a good question. I never actually thought about it that
way. Yeah, I could tell. You know, it's okay. You didn't go to medical school. You wouldn't know. You don't watch a whole lot of Grey's Anatomy.
I watched 17 seasons, but I didn't watch all of them.
Well, there you go. I mean, were you there when Mick Dreamy
did the stuff? Yeah.
No, when he dies, man.
Oh.
Or he leaves. I'm not sure which it
is. It's the same to me.
Well said.
Yeah.
Well said.
What else is well said about Nitrogen Sports?
You can play poker on the site. You can play casino games. You can play sports betting games. Well, just sports betting. You can sports bet on the site. It's Bitcoin only.
It's what?
It's Bitcoin only.
Yeah.
I said it clearly both times. And that means you get your money on super fast. But it also means, in this particular instance of Nitrogen, you get your money out super fast, too. That's right. 90 minutes, Grant. 90 minutes, I say. 90 minutes is all it takes to get your money out from when you request it. Unlike every other site out there where it takes days. Days.
Yeah, it's BS.
It's total bull crap-a-rooney.
Use the link in the description to sign up for Nitrogen for access to Poker Guys exclusives, including our tournament, which we've talked about many times.
So many times, but it's 1,000 buy-ins guaranteed, and there's a massive overlay every time.
Yeah, play it.
Yeah.
Speaking of playing, how about these guys, Coco Witch and Dietrich? Am I right? They're playing poker over here.
Whoa, nice segue.
Yeah, thanks. 400K in the pot now. Yeah. Dietrich's only got 380 left.
Yep. Okay.
He must really think this Kolkowicz guy is crazy to have called check raise.
Yeah, I guess. So, I mean, this is like the nightmare, right? You have ace king, you miss, you check it back, then you bet tiny, and then you get raised. It's like everything I've done is screamed weakness, but also he's got a clear range advantage on me.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. And I'm short, and I've got a pot size bet left now that I've decided to call somehow.
Well, something that might be aiding Dietrich, we don't know his Hendon, but most of the people who hide their Hendons have pretty good Hendons, right?
I recognized him.
Yeah.
And I recognized his name. So he's been around at least. I've seen him in other like TV situations. That's
so he probably recognized a situation here where he should play high variance because the money jumps are not that big until the top three. And it's important for him to try to build a stack at this point.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, this isn't high variance like I'm going to three bet shove my flush draw though, right?
No.
This is like, I might call you down with ace high.
That's high variance.
That is high variance, but it's a different kind of
high. He's choosing the right guy to do it against, too. The guy who is known to be a high variance guy.
Yes, that does seem to be the case.
The river is the four of hearts.
Okay.
It's deuce of hearts, six of diamonds, nine of diamonds, deuce of spades, four of hearts. Kolkowicz is left with king, queen high. Dietrich is left with ace, king high.
Yeah.
All right. You got called on the turn when you check raised.
Yeah, it's weird.
It was a small check raise, though. Should you bet again if you're Kolkowicz?
I mean, I don't like it all that I was just called here. I feel like I should be successfully folding out ace highs on the turn most of the time. I feel like now I'm up against like two eights or something like that a lot. Something like that.
Or maybe a plan, like Dietrich had a plan to always play this way against Kolkowicz with any made hand.
Well, then that's bad. I kind of want to hit the eject button here and just say, nope, next time, let's try again. This guy's short. He didn't have to put in these. He puts in two more blinds when he gets check raised on the turn when he's short, and those blinds matter to him. I don't think I want to move him in here. I think I just want to bail.
Well, he doesn't move him in. He does bet, though.
Okay.
And we should talk about that. Kolkowicz does bet. He's bluffing. He bets 235K into 400K. And I'm of two minds here.
Yeah. I see them. I see both
your
minds.
Yeah, I know
here.
You do. It looks pretty cool and strong. Like it's
it
like
does.
I want to leave you with chips because I want you to call.
It's a good story, this part of it.
Yeah.
This is a good story.
But moving in might be more effective to the point that it is a better play anyway.
I mean, if you know your rep is the crazy guy, maybe the small bet has more fold equity.
Maybe it does.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know, though, because, of course, we are in ICM places. I know it's not about laddering, but overall ICM places, right? Where if you get knocked out right now, Moritz, then you can't win the tournament and then all the money, right? So, I don't know. Threatening his whole life, he may just like feel like he has to fold. I don't know. But if we threaten his whole life, he could also feel like he has to call, you know?
Yeah.
He may be like, this makes the story even less believable. Like, come on. Really? You're going to bet that way with trip deuces? Really? You're going to move me in now when I like have so few strong hands? Really? You know? So I don't know
Me neither.
I can't tell.
I think it's cool that the story, maybe it's by luck that the story is good. Maybe Kolkowicz didn't even recognize that it was about a pot size bet left. Who knows? He's an amateur. But in this case, it ends up being a pretty good story.
It is. It's more believable now with this bet size.
At this point, though, we think from Dietrich's perspective, the Kolkowicz must only have trip deuces or better, right?
Yes. Yes.
I guess 3-5 got there on the river. That's a hand that he could potentially have.
A gut shot
that he bluffs the turn.
Maybe. I mean, if Kolkowicz had ace 9 and decided to raise the turn because value and Dietrich is short, would he bet the river? He might. He might bet the river.
To try to get called specifically by eights?
Eights or a six. Which could check back the flop reasonably.
Dietrich probably doesn't have too many sixes from the hijack when he's short and the crazy guy's in the big blind.
That's a really good point. He also might shove a hand like eights pre-flop and sevens and those kinds of hands. He might just move in so he doesn't have to deal with all this shit.
Maybe.
Right? Which is not great for us either if we have ace nine. It's weird, though, because if you have ace nine, are we just going to check? Because it's going to go check, check, like, so often if we're winning. Like, he's just not going to... How's he going to bluff? What's he going to bluff with? Like, it's hard to come up with.
Yeah.
So I might want to bet small.
But that's assuming we're check raising ace nine on the turn, which is a rarity in the first place.
Yeah, but if it goes check, check, he's short and he bets a blind on the turn. It's not crazy to check raise top, top.
So you think as Dietrich, we should include ace nine in Kolkowicz's
range? That's what I'm wondering. That's what I'm wondering out loud here. I think we should at least consider it. I don't know if it's reasonable or not. I think we should consider it.
So there's nine total combos of that available from Dietrich's perspective. We can't give him all nine combos, right?
No way. No way. He's not going to play them all like this at any street. So let's give him three combos.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the hands that make more sense that Kolkowicz could have are 3-5 and any suited deuce.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That's a lot of combos. But if Kolkowicz also is the guy who literally has all hands because he's just going to bluff no matter what, it's not enough combos to justify folding.
Yeah, then who cares? Honestly, then like we've got a million missed draws and maybe just weird crap like he actually has. Fabulous.
Kolkowicz showing up with king queen, which is kind of like a nonsensical bluffing hand on this runout, is evidence that you should call with ace king here if you're Dietrich.
You just have to. Yeah, because he can have this hand. Yeah. Yes, I agree with you. Totally. Totally. This whole hand is weird because I know we talked really quickly about the preflop stuff and you were talking about should we 3-bet shove with king queen. I wonder, like, it's possible Dietrich is shoving a lot of medium strength hands and opening a lot of very strong hands.
I guess that's possible.
So if that's the case, maybe this whole bluffing plan is just poorly thought out.
Maybe.
I don't know. I'm just wondering that now.
I mean, I don't think there's any real thought behind this bluffing plan and any of the other bluffing plans that Kolkowicz has had throughout the tournament, because it's always a bluffing plan for Kolkowicz.
But it's mostly worked. Like, he's got a lot of chips. He's doing fine.
Yeah.
He's going to finish reasonably well.
He is. Tournament. He is. Dietrich does end up calling, though.
Yeah, he calls.
Which, you know, I get it.
Me too.
Against a player like this, I totally get it.
But man, it sucks. He looks very unhappy calling.
He does.
And I would be very unhappy if I decided to call.
Yes, but you'd be happy once you did call.
I mean, if we call the raise on the turn, we have to call a fair amount of the time on the river, right?
Yeah, this isn't a card that should be scary enough. I mean, 3-5 gets there, but that's not enough.
Yeah, also, if you think about all the hands we check back on the flop, like, unless we're checking all the made hands on the flop to set up all this stuff, if we're not doing that, if we have a more like, I've got 18 blinds, of course I'm betting 2-10s on the turn, on the flop. Of course I am. You know, I have 10-9 suited, of course I'm betting, whatever. Then this hand is one of the best hands we probably show up with when we bet tiny on the turn.
True.
And then, like, we probably do have, we call with the intention of calling a lot of rivers. And this is the kind of river we should call. I would guess, though, one of the reasons why he doesn't like it is because of the small size, though. Like, he probably calls quicker against a shove.
That might be true. That might be true. So good job, Kolkowicz, I guess, because it made it maybe more likely.
I mean, he looked very unhappy. How long did it actually take him to call?
It's hard to know because it's edited, you know? Oh, no.
Edited.
Damn, those editors.
Yeah.
Anyway, in the end, Kolkowicz still went further than Dietrich, still had a lot of chips left, ended up fifth. Dietrich got ninth. Good job by all.
You know who won this event?
Steve Buscemi?
No. Steve O'Dwyer finished in the top whatever, but it was won by Raffaele Sorrentino.
Oh, that guy.
This is the tournament where he played the hand that we've done with the ace queen against Douglas Souza, who finished 15th.
That was a good hand.
Yep. Yes, it was. Is my sunlight, and all I need is one mic, and I can show every single MC how it's done right. Every time I come by, I'm bound to leave them tongue-tied. I'm sipping on liquor, a quitter is what I'm not. We got one life, and I took a minor break, but I'm back to claim the throne. I'm gonna be traveling the globe, we still have time to make...